Good morning, colleagues. We are now going to discuss the results of a very important randomized screening trial for oral cancer control conducted in Trivandrum district, Kerala, India. This study was supported by the Association for International Cancer Research, Scotland, in the United Kingdom. And this is a collaborative project between the Regional Cancer Center, Trivandrum, the state of Kerala, India, and the International Agency for Research on Cancer, Lyon, France. The results of this important study was published recently in the Lancet, and the results were also presented in an internal seminar in the International Agency for Research on Cancer. So we will deliberate the results in detail in this presentation. You may be aware that oral cancer is one of the most important cancers globally. In fact, it is the 11th most commonest cancer. It accounts for around 274,000 new cases and about 128,000 deaths annually. Particularly, a very high risk is observed in certain regions of the world like South Asia, Southeast Asia, Eastern Europe, parts of France, and regions in Latin America. One can say that two-thirds of the global burden is experienced in developing countries, and it has been categorically established that oral cancer is caused by use of tobacco and alcohol. And in fact, people who smoke or chew or use tobacco in any form are at a very high risk of developing oral cancer. And by avoiding tobacco habits and by practicing moderation in alcohol, one can prevent oral cancer. And another interesting thing is, just like cervical cancer, invasive oral cancers are preceded by well-established precancerous lesions and conditions. And this gives an opportunity to detect disease very early in its natural history, at the precancerous stage or at the preclinical invasive cancer stage. So thus, oral cancer is one of those very few cancers where you know the cause very well. So you can prevent them by avoiding risk factors, and you can also detect them quite early because of this very interesting and long natural history. This is a quick clinical reference chart to aid in oral visual inspection. This chart essentially shows the different precancerous lesions like the homogeneous leukoplakia, ulcerated leukoplakia, verrucous leukoplakia, nodular leukoplakia, erythroplakia, and precancerous conditions like oral submucous fibrosis and invasive cancers, early invasive cancer and advanced invasive cancer. Leukoplakia is essentially characterized by a white patch which cannot be removed by rubbing. And erythroplakia is essentially characterized by a reddish velvety area, while oral submucous fibrosis, the entire oral cavity or parts of oral mucosa become fibrous, become lackluster, and they lose their shiny appearance, which results in fibrotic contraction and deformities and difficulty in speaking and deglutition. Of course, invasive oral cancer is characterized by an ulcer, which is quite painless at the beginning but becomes painful as the ulceration increases and then starts involving adjacent bones, skin, and then starts spreading to the regional cervical lymph nodes in the cervical region. It's very interesting to look into the current survival prospects of oral cancer. Take the case of tongue cancer. The 5-year survival rates in India seldom exceed 30%. And in Thailand, it's between 18 to 37%. And even in countries with more developed healthcare systems like Singapore or Europe, five-year survival seldom exceeds 40%. So this means this is one of the cancers where the prognosis has been very poor. And in fact, the prognosis has not improved over the last few decades. And it seems to be a reflection of the advanced stage at presentation, where treatment results are not very satisfactory. Here, the five-year survival from cancers occurring in the oral cavity other than tongue are shown. And it is no different from tongue cancer. If you see the regions in India, the five-year survival seldom exceeds 40%. In Thailand, it is the same experience. Singapore, again, the same. And in European countries, again, the five-year survival is around 44%. And in the United States, among white populations, it's around 62%, and in black populations, around 40%. So this again shows the survival prospects are not that bright for cancers in the oral cavity as such. It is very clear here that the five-year survival from oral cancer has not improved over the last 3 decades. The data comes from the Surveillance Epidemiology End Result Program, Cancer Registries in the United States. And among the black population, it has remained constantly less than 40%, and among the white population, around 60%. So, it is very important now to consider early detection as a method to improve the outcome from oral cancer. There has been several advances in treatment, but these advances in treatment have not translated into an improved survival and reduced deaths, because oral cancer has been always diagnosed in advanced stages in many parts of the world. So, the solution lies in early detection. And for detecting oral cancer early, we have a very simple test, which is oral visual inspection, which can be administered easily in all healthcare settings by a variety of healthcare providers like doctors, nurses, and health workers. And we very clearly said earlier that oral cancer is amenable for primary prevention by avoiding risk factors. And there are many studies which show that oral visual inspection as a screening tool has an acceptable sensitivity and specificity. Its sensitivity varies between 70 to 80% for detecting oral lesions, and its specificity varies between 85 to 95%. Even though there have been many studies which have addressed the performance characteristics of oral visual inspection as a screening tool, there have been no studies, well-conducted studies, to evaluate the efficacy of oral cancer screening in reducing mortality from oral cancer. So, the Regional Cancer Center in Trivandrum, India, and the International Agency for Research on Cancer of the World Health Organization together initiated a cluster randomized controlled screening trial in 1995 in Trivandrum district to address the efficacy of oral cancer screening by oral visual inspection in detecting early stages of oral cancer and in reducing death from oral cancer, and to study what factors determine that populations, people, the target people, comply with screening, and to evaluate what is the cost effectiveness of oral cancer screening in reducing oral cancer deaths. The study was conducted in Trivandrum district, very near to the city of Trivandrum, the capital of the state of Kerala, and it involved 13 administrative regions called panchayats. The Trivandrum district, or as such the state of Kerala, is very thickly populated. So in such a thickly populated region, a randomized intervention trial based on individual randomization is difficult and may result in considerable contamination. So to avoid this, we decided to do a cluster randomized intervention trial, and we looked into the possibilities of organizing the clusters. Initially, we decided to use small clusters, but when we looked into this again, there's a good possibility for contamination. So finally, we decided we will have 13 clusters. So each panchayat was considered as a cluster. So they were randomized between a control group to receive usual care, that is the current health education and other activities, and the tobacco prevention messages. And 7 clusters were randomized to receive the intervention, which is oral cancer screening by trained health workers once in 3 years to people aged 34 or more years. And as I said earlier, screening was repeated once in 3 years for a maximum of 3 rounds, and the screen positive individuals detected during screening were referred for further confirmation and diagnosis by dentists and doctors, and treatment was provided to people detected with precancers and cancers. And the entire study population was followed up for oral cancer incidence and mortality to evaluate the reduction in oral cancer incidence and mortality. To further expand on the methods, as I already said, 13 panchayats were randomized, 7 to the intervention group and 6 to the control group. There were approximately 200,000 people in the entire study area, about 97,000 people in the intervention clusters, and about 95,000 people in the control clusters. Information on socio-demographic factors and habits were collected for both intervention and control cohorts by household surveys and personal interviews. And people in both the control and intervention cohorts were educated on the harmful aspects of tobacco and the importance of moderating the use of alcohol, and the importance of eating more green vegetables and fruits in their daily diet. So people aged 35 years or more in good health were eligible for screening, and they were reached out at their homes, and screening was carried out by trained health workers under good daylight and between 1996 and 2004. 3 rounds of screening at 3-year intervals were carried out, and the screen positive subjects were referred for confirmation, biopsy and further investigations. And those diagnosed with precancers were advised cessation of habits, and wherever possible, a surgical excision was attempted. And oral cancers were treated either with radiation therapy or surgery or both, according to the stage of diagnosis, according to the established principles of treatment. So what constitutes screen positivity when eligible subjects were examined by trained health workers? The detection of white, red or nodular lesions, which are not removable in the oral cavity and which are clinically suggestive of leukoplakia or erythroplakia or lichen planus, or the clinical findings of oral submucous fibrosis in the mouth, or the presence of a suspicious growth or ulcer which is likely to be a oral cancer. Any one of these constituted the criteria for screen positivity. So subjects with one or more of these findings were referred for further confirmatory examination by dentists or doctors. This shows the distribution of the screening results by the health workers. About 87,000 people were examined at least once, and more than 2/3 had normal findings, and about 2.5% had findings suggestive of homogeneous leukoplakia, and about 2.2% had findings suggestive of non-homogeneous leukoplakia, less than 1% with submucous fibrosis, and about 0.4% with suspicious ulcers or growths, and a quarter had findings which are like aphthous ulcers, benign swellings, etc. So they were considered as non-referable lesions. In fact, for every 100 people screened with oral visual inspection, about 6 people were referred as screen positive. The screen positive subjects, when they presented for confirmatory examination by the doctor or dentist, they were carefully examined, the clinical findings were noted, and whenever required, a biopsy was directed using a punch biopsy technique, and the specimens were subjected for histopathological examination. Now we will look into the distribution of personal habits between the control and intervention groups. Habits like chewing, the distribution of habits like chewing and alcohol drinking among males and females were more or less similar between the intervention and control groups. There was a slight excess of smokers in the intervention group, and about the proportion of people with no habits were almost similar in the intervention and control groups. So for every practical purpose, the distribution of the major risk factors causing oral cancer were more or less similar in the intervention and control group, indicating the success of randomization in producing comparable groups. The distribution of other important socioeconomic and demographic characteristics between the intervention and control groups were also similar. For example, the factors which indicate the socioeconomic status, like education, the type of household, income, they were more or less equally distributed. And the distribution of sex and age groups were also similar. Overall, 35% were screened at least once, 25% had at least two screening rounds, and 30% had three screening rounds. About 9% of the participants did not participate in screening. And overall, about 5,145 subjects were identified as screen positive, of whom 3,218 complied with the referral investigations. So, 2/3 of the people, screen positive people, complied with confirmatory examination. So, what are the indicators that we used for monitoring the progress of the study and for the evaluating the outcomes? We used a set of process measures and outcome measures. The process measure used were like participation screening, what proportion of people, target people, participated in screening, what proportion of screen positive people participated in diagnostic investigations, what proportion of people with confirmed disease had treatment, and what is the proportion of screen positivity. So these were some of the process measures. We had two sets of outcome measures, the intermediate or the short-term outcome measures and the final or long-term outcome measures. The intermediate outcome measures were, what's the detection rate of precancer and cancer? What proportion of people for every 1,000 screened people had a precancer or a cancer diagnosed? What is the program sensitivity? Program sensitivity refers to the screen-detected cancers as a proportion of the total cancers diagnosed in the intervention population. What's the positive predictive value of the screening test to detect both precancers and cancer? What's the stage distribution of the cancers diagnosed in the intervention group and in the control group? What are the 2- and 5-year survival probabilities in the study groups? And what proportion of diagnosed cancers died, that is the case fatality rate, in the intervention group and control group? And the final outcome measure was reduction in mortality from oral cancer. What's a mortality rate from oral cancer in the intervention group as compared to the control group? How different they are? Is there a really a lower death rate from oral cancer in the intervention group, and can it be attributed to screening? So what sources of data we used for monitoring and evaluation? Of course, we used the study database. All the data in the study were captured in printed forms, and our data managers produced a software for entering this data. So we had a study database available at any point of time as the study progressed. So we used the study database for some of the process variables. And there is a population-based cancer registry which was monitoring cancer incidence rate in the population included in screening. So from which we were able to get who developed oral cancer and who died of it, and we were able to match it with our screening database. And there are several mortality registration offices attached with the panchayats and the municipality. So we talked to them, we linked the data from there, we strengthened this mortality data collection. In addition, we went to the death registers kept in the churches and mosques, because some of these are not reflected in the government death registration systems. And to complete the totality of the follow-up, we actively followed up each and every individuals in households by household surveys. So we put in place a follow-up mechanism which is as comprehensive as possible to collect as comprehensively the important data to evaluate the efficacy of screening. And some of the process measures we already discussed. About 90% of the target population was screened at least once. About 2/3 of the screen positive people complied with referral investigations, and more than 75% of the people diagnosed with cancers obtained treatment, and a large proportion of people with precancers were advised habit cessation, and about 10% had their lesions excised. In others, it could not be excised because they were quite extensive. And of course, you should be aware that management of oral precancers is not as straightforward or as easy as managing cervical intraepithelial lesions. Now we will look into some of the intermediate outcome measures. So this shows the stage distribution of oral cancers diagnosed in the intervention and control groups. Around 40% of the people with oral cancer in the intervention group had a stage 1 or 2 disease, as compared to 23% in the control group, which was significantly different. The control group consisted of a large proportion of stage 3, 4 cancers, which is like 2/3 of the control oral cancers were in stage 2 or 3. This graph shows what is the overall survival experience of oral cancer patients in the intervention and control groups. It was significantly different, as you see here. At 5 years from diagnosis, about 50% of the oral cancer patients in the intervention group survived, as compared to around 30% in the control group. And the difference was widening with increasing follow-up. This graph shows the survival experience of certain subsets of patients. The survival experience of the screen-detected intervention oral cancer patients were much higher than clinically detected or interval oral cancers in the intervention group. And in fact, the survival experience of cancer patients in the control group and the interval cancers in the intervention groups were similar. The worst prognosis was observed for people in the intervention group who did not participate in screening, and this is in expected lines. This graph shows survival experience of oral cancer patients by stage. About 80% of the patients with stage 1 disease survived at 5 years, as compared to 70% in stage 2 and about 48% in stage 3 and around 15% in stage 4. This flowchart summarizes the entire study. Overall, 191,000 subjects in the study groups. In the intervention group, 7 clusters, 96,000 people, and over a 9-year follow-up period, person years of observation around 470,000. And in the control group, 95,000 people in 6 clusters, and a person years of observations like 420,000. 90% of the people in the intervention group participated in screening. 5.9% were screen positive, that is about 5,145 people. 2/3 of the screen positive people complied with the referral. So 2,252 were diagnosed with precancers. 131 were screen detected oral cancers, and 74 people were clinically detected as oral cancers. So overall 205 oral cancers in the intervention group, which gave an incidence rate of 43.7 per 100,000. And in the control group, 158 cancers were diagnosed during this period with an incidence rate of 37.6%. The excess detection in the intervention group is due to screening, and over 1995 to 2004, that's over a period of 9 years, there were 77 deaths from oral cancer in the intervention group as compared to 87 deaths in the control group. So an excess of 10 deaths in the control group. This flowchart shows the results restricted to those people with tobacco and alcohol habits. In fact, we said people with tobacco and alcohol habits are at very high risk for oral cancer. In fact, one can say almost all oral cancers develop in persons with tobacco and or alcohol habits. So we wanted to restrict the analysis to these people with very high risk for oral cancer. So in the intervention group, there were 45,000 people with these habits as compared to 39,000 people with habits in the control group. And the person years are shown here. And about 90% of the people with habits participated in screening, which is very interesting. And about 4,900 were detected with were identified as screen positives, and 3,040 were identified with some lesion. And as you see here, almost all lesions were identified in people with habits. So there were 2,200 people with precancers, 130 with screen detected cancers, and 60 clinically detected cancers in the intervention group. So overall 190 cancers in the intervention group in people with tobacco and alcohol habits, as compared to 156 cancers in the control group. This translated to an oral cancer incidence rate of 81 per 100,000 in the intervention group and 83 per 100,000 in the control group. There were 70 deaths from oral cancer in the intervention group and 85 deaths from oral cancer in the control group. So there is an excess of 15 oral cancer deaths in the control group. This slide shows the comparison of oral cancer incidence and mortality rates in the intervention and control groups expressed as relative risk of incidence or death. So overall, taking all subjects involved in the study, the oral cancer incidence rate ratio or the relative risk was 1.16. That means there is a 16% excess of oral cancers in the intervention group as compared to the control group because of screening, and this did not reach statistical significance. The oral cancer death rate in the intervention group was 16.4 per 100,000 people, and it was 20.7 per 100,000 people in the control group. So the relative risk of death was 0.79. That means there were 21% lesser oral cancer deaths in the intervention group but it did not reach statistical significance. And when you restricted the analysis to tobacco and alcohol uses, the incidence rate ratio was almost 1, so there is no difference. But when you compare the deaths, the mortality rate ratio was 0.66. That means in people with tobacco and alcohol habits, oral cancer screening was associated with a 34% reduction in mortality, which was statistically significant. And the events were very few in people without habits. So the study did not have the power to address this, the value of screening in people without habits. What the study clearly shows is that in people with tobacco and alcohol habits who are at very high risk of oral cancer, inspection of the oral cavity at regular intervals can detect very early oral cancers, and if appropriate treatment is provided, a large number of deaths can be avoided. Now, the results are shown according to the sex. Among males with tobacco habits, oral cancer death rate ratio was 0.57. That indicates there is a 43% reduction in oral cancer deaths among people with tobacco and alcohol habits, men with tobacco and alcohol habits who had screening as compared to the control group. And among women, the mortality rate ratio was 0.78, indicating a 22% reduction in deaths from oral cancer, which did not reach statistical significance. Maybe with prolonged follow-up, there may be more events, so we have more definitive results for women in subsequent periods of follow-up. The results of this important study were published in the well-known medical journal Lancet in the year 2005 in volume 365 in pages 1927-33. An important letter concerning this article was published in the same journal in 2005 in the October 8 issue, which again clarifies some of the points raised by other investigators. The large sample size and prolonged years of follow-up have given us an opportunity to study the natural history of oral lesions. For example, what proportion of oral precancers regress? What proportion progress to invasive cancer? What proportion remain persistent? This information was lacking from large population-based studies, and most of the information available for oral lesions were from selected hospital-based studies from which very limited information can be gleaned. I think with prolonged years of follow-up, we have a fantastic opportunity to address the natural history of oral precancers in a way which is compatible with what we know about cervical precancers and can contribute immensely for the control of oral cancer. Our preliminary results show that less than 1% of homogeneous leukoplakias progress to invasive cancer, while more than 90% of them regress. Around 1% of non-homogeneous leukoplakia progress to oral cancer, and about 82% regress, and only around 17% persist. On the other hand, the oral precancerous condition, which is submucous fibrosis, about 4% progress to invasive cancer over a 9-year follow-up period, and about 71% regress. people used to maintain that submucous fibrosis is an irreversible condition. And our study clearly establishes submucous fibrosis is reversible, even though regression happens in a much lesser proportion as compared to leukoplakias. Still, more than 2/3 regress to normal, and this is a very important finding. I think these results should be treated as preliminary results. We are doing more in-depth analysis, and the results will be published soon. So, what do we conclude from this study? People participate well in oral cancer screening. More than 90% participated. There is a moderate compliance to referral, around 62%. A significant proportion of oral cancers were detected in early stages by screening. And there is a significant 33% reduction in mortality from oral cancer among people with tobacco and alcohol habits. The risk of oral cancer is extremely low among persons with no tobacco or alcohol habits. Or in other words, screening can be limited to people with tobacco or alcohol habits. And based on this study, we believe if oral cancer screening implemented and practiced in healthcare settings throughout the world, it has the potential to reduce at least 37,000 deaths from oral cancer worldwide. These are the project staff who participated in implementing the screening study in Trivandrum district, along with the investigators Dr. Babu Matthew, Dr. Ramdas, Dr. Gigi Thomas, Dr. Tara Swaminathan. And this dedicated team of workers conducted the first ever randomized oral cancer screening trial in the world and provided important information to carry forward oral cancer prevention in coming years. Festivity, life, and culture are very much interwoven in India. Almost every day there is a festivity. And this shows a major festivity in the town of Trichur in Kerala, which is the Trichur Puram, where the two principal investigators of the study, Dr. Ramdas and Dr. Shankar, participating in the procession. And the following picture shows the elephants being decorated, revered, and paraded in the festive celebration, which is participated by all walks of people from all religions, conveying a message of universal brotherhood. This study was supported by a generous grant from the Association for International Cancer Research in St. Andrews, Scotland, UK. They have been very helpful in initiating, maintaining, and conducting the study, without whose support the study would not have been possible. We take this opportunity again to express our gratitude to the Association for International Cancer Research and their staff. Of course, it's a collaborative effort. So the Ministry of Health and Family Welfare, Government of Kerala, helped us by providing the local infrastructure and their healthcare personnel in the region. And the Trivandrum Population-Based Cancer Registry helped us in the follow-up evaluation of the project. And the Trivandrum District Administration was helpful in conducting the study and in collecting the mortality data. And of course, the people of Trivandrum District, we are very grateful to them for cooperating with us in the conduct of this study. Thank you for your kind attention.